This podcast is brought to you by Wealth Within, a global leader in stock market education. For more information on our courses, head over to wealthwithin.com.au. Please note that the information in this podcast should not be considered personal financial advice. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Talking Wealth podcast. You're on with Phil and Pedro, and today we are going to be breaking down why your brain won't let you take trading losses and how to overcome this to make you a much, much better trader. We're going to unpack psychology behind why traders hold on too long, the fear of taking profits and losses, and how mastering these instincts can transform long-term results. It is one of the most important things in trading that is often least covered. So this is going to be very informative. Welcome, Pedro. How are you, mate?
Phil, yeah, good, mate. Look, this is a very important one. It may not seem very sexy, you know, or, you know, looking for opportunities. We're not going to really be uncovering stocks like we usually do. But, you know, this is a big part of people's strategies and a mindset that really needs to be embedded. And something that I see across the board, you know, many students that come to us, you know, sometimes they tell me about their portfolios, many of the time in a loss. And I'm sure that this has a lot to do with it, the fear of taking those losses.
Yeah. I mean, look, as I was putting this podcast together, just so many things I was putting and you know, collating and reading, and it's just taking me back through all the years of mistakes I've made, mistakes I've seen people make. It's crazy how, you know, after all these years, when you break down the journey so far, you go, damn, this is so important. And it was one of the things I didn't pay any attention to. So it's a different level of psychology analysis that we're going to deal with, because I'm, you know, for me, there are those psychology type analysis things where it's like, oh, you know, you want to be positive, you want to be this. And I think that's a whole bunch of, first you need a discipline and a skill set before you can tell yourself how good you are, or think that you can just, you know, those ones that say, oh, just think about money in the ether and money will come to you. But sit on your ass and do nothing.
The universe.
And let's see what happens. Yeah, the universe will give it to you without any work, mind you. You just got to think about it and don't do any work. It's funny how the ones who do work all of a sudden have it or achieve their goals. Tell Michael Jordan to be great without shooting the ball. Just sit at home and think about it while eating your Doritos or cheezels.
The universe will just bring it to you. I think there's one little factor in there, which is called action.
All right. Let's. Well, I want to start off with a situation that probably everyone has experienced. This is a scenario. You buy a stock at 10 bucks, it goes to 15, you're feeling fantastic, you're up 50%, then it drops to 14, down to 13, you're still up 30%, yet somehow you don't feel like you've made $3, you feel like you've lost $2. So you tell yourself, I'm not selling now, I'll wait until it gets back to 15. So I think the first part to unpack from this, and if you're someone who experiences this, I think the question we need to ask is, why does taking a 30% profit suddenly feel like taking a loss? And even more importantly, could our inability to accept that feeling be one of the reasons traders eventually suffer enormous losses? So what if becoming comfortable with taking losses, both real and perceived, could actually make you substantially more profitable over your lifetime? Because if you just avoided a handful of those catastrophic declines over 20, 30 years, like a GFC that happens around that time frame, it can have an enormous effect on compounding, on how much you end up with after retirement. And so I think the first way to unpack all of this, I mean, is that, you know, before I do, how often do you see that, you know, a stock goes up and then it starts pulling back down and you start to feel like you're losing, but you're not. You never had that to begin with, but you become attached to that paper profit and you go, okay, this is not a good situation.
Oh yeah, for sure. Now that happens if you're watching it every day more than anything. If you're really watching your stocks like a hawk, you're going to see those ebbs and flows. And you know, I would actually think that if you could see the fluctuations in your property prices, in the same way that you see stock prices, you'd be getting the shock of your life, because I'm sure that that's a way that you know they move as well, and it's just the way that the markets move. They ebb and flow. So when you see that on the actual screen and you see a green plus, you know, saying 10% profit or a dollar value, $1,000 up, and then the next day you see only $600 up. Well, did I just miss out on $400? And you know, really, that wasn't yours to begin with. But I mean, I'm sure we're going to get into it. You know, how to deal with all that. But definitely, it's a real thing, and it's very psychological.
Yeah, and it affects the decisions you make from day to day in terms of buying and selling. But I mean, why it hurts so much? Oh, it's really, I'm going to introduce Daniel Kahneman and Amos Tversky's prospect theory. This is where we can put some science behind these feelings. Basically,
no relation, Tversky.
No, I didn't even think of that. No, well, it's similar, and his is spelt different.
Yeah,
nice pickup.
But probably from the same parts of the globe.
I've got mine's hollow inside, so I can't deal with any psychological stuff. You got to have a brain to do that, don't you?
Come on.
Yeah. Anyway, so people don't evaluate. Well, basically, this is their prospect theory. People don't evaluate financial outcomes purely mathematically. This is the problem. We evaluate them relative to where we believe we started. And the losses generally carry more psychological weight than equivalent gains. There's plenty of research from these guys on this. If you want to go and check out their names, it's Kahneman, Kahneman, and Tversky, Tversky's prospect theory research. Now, I'll give you an example of what they mean. So imagine you've got two situations. Situation A, you're ahead 1,000. You take the 1,000. Or gamble for a chance to make 2,000. Many people become protective of the game, of the gain of 1,000. They don't want to go to take it to 2,000. Now, option B, you're down 1,000. You're not up. Accept the $1,000 loss or gamble for the possibility of getting back to break even while risking losing more. Suddenly gambling becomes much more attractive.
Yes.
Okay?
Yep.
And replace the word gambling and put trading, because this is exactly how people are trading it. So the implications here is that this can create exactly the behavior traders don't want. Protecting small winners, gamble with losers. And this
and a lot of people double down when they're in that scenario. They'll start to try to dollar cost average and buy more to reach a break even.
Yeah, and this eventually leads to. And, you know, we've had Zoran, who comes on our show a lot, who has seen thousands and thousands of trades come through by retail traders, because he deals, you know, he's a broker. And you know, the things he sees is very much, if we were to snapshot this scenario, it is what it is where somebody gets a small gain, they protect that gain so much, then when they're in the red, they're willing to gamble that for the hope that it comes back, which ends up putting you into a situation as a trader of cutting your profits short and letting your losses run. Where if the reality to be successful is the opposite, let your profits run, cut your losses short. But most people do that because of this mindset. So if you're one of those people, go and check out the loss aversion, the prospect theory. Have a good read, because it might be the thing that totally revolutionizes your trading. And even if you don't have a great edge, if you were positioned or built around letting profits run and cutting losses short, it'll make an immense difference to your results. And we're not going to talk about edge today, I've promised myself. Because I know it is the most important thing about having a skill set and knowledge, but let's not even go there today, because this is about psychology. So this leads naturally into the next one, which is we ask the question, why can't we sell losing trades? And the common thing is, well, it's only a paper loss. I haven't realized the loss yet, so it's not real. So selling then changes the psychology story from I'm temporarily down to I was wrong and lost 5,000. So people delay making that acknowledgement. You know, your thoughts on this? You see this a lot as well. I mean,
oh yeah, for sure. I mean, I've had students that have come to us, and unfortunately, they've been down as much as 50%. You know, in their portfolios in individual shares, and you know, you think 50%, and then you start to think about the mechanics of that, how that works, because you know, we've been there ourselves as traders. You know, I've been there also, and you go through stages where, you know, you're 10% down and you say, okay, well, it's only 10%. You know, let's see what happens. It goes down to maybe 15, 20. It's hit your stop loss. You say, oh, and it's a battle between yourself. And that's the worst part about trading, is that it's you versus you. There's nobody telling you, hey, hold on here. You're starting to think a little bit wrong. You're having this conversation with yourself and saying, ah, a little bit of a break in the rule isn't going to matter, not this time, you know. And maybe my analysis was wrong. Yeah, I'm already down this much. I'll just, what if I just double up and just say you got in at $10, you're down 20%. I'll just add in another position. That means that it only needs to get to $9 for me to break even. So now you think that you're moving that kind of a threshold down, but suddenly now you've doubled your position, doubled your risk. And it's in a stock that's going down. So now you're going against the trend. So now your edge is wrong, and you're thinking that you're being smart by averaging down. And then that just continues down until you hit a point where you say, well, I mean, how much more can I put in? Now I'm down this much. You've quadrupled your position size. Suddenly all the other positions that you've had that may be in the green, they're like one quarter of that position that is in the loss. So those gains aren't going to be enough to offset that loss. Yeah, so many things. And as you can tell, you know, I've been there before, and it's a whirlwind that just keeps dragging you down, and you need to cut it before it gets to that.
I'll put it in simple English because we're simple guys. It's the shittest feeling in the world.
Yeah.
Why not? I mean, look, let's not. There are many things that could happen. Obviously, you know, people go through a lot, and health and all that, that is so much important. But when it comes to this, it is one of the worst feelings. Being in that mindset, chasing, hoping, you're trying to sleep at night going, man, I hope tomorrow's, watching the US futures markets, I hope the US is up. So my stuff, and then the US is up and you wake up in the morning, you go, oh, it's going to be good. Oh, it'll come back, and it gets dumped, and then makes you even worse. And you're bad around your family. You're bad around your friends. Which is important that we talk like this, because the question here is that everyone needs to ask themselves when they're going through this, what are you actually protecting? Are you protecting your capital, which is what you're supposed to do, or are you protecting your ego? Because sometimes refusing to sell, it doesn't become an investment decision anymore. It's admitting you're wrong. And this is why I think the market has been the biggest humbler for me. Like my whole character, you know, has changed because of the market. When they say certain things change you, you know, going through certain things change you. Yeah, it's true. I mean, there are only two things I know in my life that can change you. Obviously, big events, family, you know, things that can happen with, that can change the way a person is. But go step in the ring with somebody that's a lot more skilled than you. That's a good way to get humbled and fast. When somebody manhandles you. And for females, I don't have an example, so I apologize. Or go out and start trading and have a few wins, and then go tell everybody about how great you are and you have the best strategy. Like, I knew a guy, I remember, was telling people to get into, he only just started trading, and I knew him from school, and he was telling people to buy a one of those coins. I can't remember, was it Solana? It was one of those coins that was like really hot.
The latest shit coin.
Yeah, the latest shit coin. I can't remember the name of it, but it was really popular, right? And he was telling, and all these people jumped in. And then he went missing for a few years. Like, not physically, but like, because that was a massive ego hit, because the coin went to nothing. So people lost a lot. That is a nice humbling moment. even worse when you're out there and vocal about things.
Yeah.
And that's part of the challenges of our job, what we do as financial analysts. Whether we like it or not, we're putting our balls on the line every week, making calls. Yeah. But we're coming from a space of understanding risk and knowing what can go wrong. And in our personal trading, and this is the thing not to confuse an analyst to trading. Yeah, when you go out into the media, you've got to say something that grabs attention. But as a trader, you don't give a crap about any of that. You just care about risk. You know, if things turn, I know when to cut risk. And so the decision about being right or wrong is not important, which comes back to what? You've divested yourself from your ego. That's the biggest thing you can do as a trader, is get rid of your ego. And the way to do that, stop caring about whether you're right or wrong. If you're wrong and there's reason, and you're wrong because your strategy sucks, or you're wrong because you're buying at the wrong time, your emotions affecting you, you use that wrong to better your strategy. But you don't take it as a personal hit to your ego. Mate, you're in this game. You're not going to be right 100% of the time. But being wrong, failure, helps you really work on your system, on your strategy, so much more than being right does. But again, it's about ask yourself, what are you doing by not selling? Yeah. What are you really doing?
For me, one of the big ego hits was, and I still kind of, you know, think about this from time to time. You know, I'm not perfect, obviously. You know, we're still learning, but it's a win-loss ratio. So I've got a sophisticated, you know, method that I use to work out. You know, I put all my trades, and then it works out in real time what my win-loss ratio is. And if I'm going to take a hit, like, it's not so much the money that I worry about, because I know that I'm going to get that back in another trade. I just think, oh crap, that win-loss ratio is going to go down now. Like, yeah. It's going to go from 80 something, you know, 86 down to 84 or 83 or something. And I'm just thinking, crap, I just want to get that ratio up. You know, I want to get that percentage to a, you know, above 80 at least. You know, 70, above 70, you're still doing good. Below that, you know, you got to work out what your strategy is. But for me, that was the ego thing. But then you got to remember, there's also another figure in there, and that's the profitability.
That's the biggest one.
That's the biggest one, and that's what you're saying, that at the end of the day, you're not in this to be perfect. You're in this to make money and be profitable, right?
Yeah, for sure. Which I guess brings us to something even more important, which is the break-even theory. And I'll give you an example. You buy it at $10, it falls to $8. What do the trader say? I'll sell it when it gets back to 10. But you've got to ask yourself, why? The market doesn't know that you paid 10 bucks for it. There's nothing inherently special about your entry price. Your brain has simply turned that, your buy price, into a reference point. So this is a question you should ask yourself if you fall into this fallacy. If I didn't own the stock right now, would I buy it at $8? If the answer is no, why are you continuing to own it? It's a very simple way to remove your purchasing price from the decision. So rather than, and that is such a common thing. I mean, don't think you're alone if you're thinking like this, where you buy it, it falls down, and you go, I'll just close it back at break even. And then it may never get back to break even. So that is a perfect practical thing you can do, is just ask yourself that question. If I never bought it at the current price, would I buy it? If that answer is no, you should know what to do.
Then probably other people wouldn't be either, you know, if you're thinking like that.
There's no reason to hold it anymore.
No reason. And I think another thing, I mean, just adding a little bit onto that, is if you're trading CFDs or if you're using margin, it's those costs that are building up while you're holding that position that's going down.
Mm.
Fair enough if it's going up, because the profit that you're getting is offsetting that overnight funding or the margin amount. But if you're holding it in a loss, it's costing you the overnight funding or the interest, plus that negative return.
Yeah. Well, then let's bring up another scenario, which is I'm already down 10 grand. I'm not selling now. So you think about the 10 grand, that whole theory there is backwards because the 10 grand is already gone from the current value of the portfolio. Your decision today should be, where should the remaining capital be invested from here? Not how do I get my original 10 grand back from this particular stock? So it's called sunk cost thinking, an escalation of commitment that can keep people committed to failing decisions. And
yeah,
again, it's just important to talk about this stuff and highlight these scenarios because I'm sure if we've gone through them, I'm sure you've gone through them or you're about to go through them. And if you're about to go through them, don't let it become a common thing. Learn from it. Hopefully these words sink in quicker than some people, because especially if you're the stubborn type, I'm a very stubborn type person.
Yeah.
Don't tell me, you know, and it was like that, even learning. And to some degree, you have to be. You have to be a good skeptic when it comes to trading. Like even when I learned at Wealth Within, when I first came, you know, someone would say, oh, I'd read the book and say, oh, this, you know, I'd read something in the course and say, this is the way this works. I was like, well, okay. And then someone would say, oh, I think, you know, this technique works like this. And I'd go, well, no, I'm going to go and see for myself. And I've always been, no, I'm going to test it myself. And I would implore you to do that. Whatever you learn, go and check for yourself. Or when someone says something, go and look at what they say. You know, it's healthy to be that way.
I think, you know, on that scenario, it's worth, noting that I had a call with a student the other day, and he was down on his portfolio, and he was saying, I don't know whether to sell my positions or not. He was down quite a lot. And then this is what I said to him, right? And this goes back to this, you know, I'm already down 10,000. I'm not selling now. So this stock is down, say, 50%, right? It's down for a reason. It's been downgraded. Their profits are not good. Obviously, the market doesn't think that it's worth what it used to be worth, right? So now, if you're down 50%, you need to make 100% to get back to your original position. Now, how likely is that stock going to be to make 100% return in the next couple of months or in the next year? How likely? I mean, this company's beaten down, something's happened, their profits are not there. How likely is this stock? So it goes back to also thinking, if the stock was trading at this current price, would you buy it right now? Now, imagine you sell out of that position and now you identify using your edge another stock that's actually looking quite promising. And that stock has the potential to go up 100% in the next couple of months. Well, you can actually get your money back from the other stock, but using another stock that has more potential and more likelihood that it's going to go up 100%. So I would say to you guys, don't only think that you can just use that stock to get back to your break even. Switch it up.
Yeah.
Take it out of that one, put it into one that will actually have the opportunity to get there.
Yeah, it's a good point. And I think this brings us to another very important part, which is it's a less obvious problem, which is why we can't take profits. How does a profit become a loss? Or I'm really using my words well here. How an actual profit becomes a loss. So let's go back to that initial example. Buy at $10, it goes to 15, then it falls back to 13. You're up 30%, but you're upset. Why? Because your reference point has moved. Originally, $10 was the reference point. After spending weeks looking at $15, now $15 is the new psychological reference point. Your brain isn't calculating 13 to 10, $3 profit. It's calculating the $2 lost. Yeah, obviously we follow. Now, your portfolio, and this comes to the next part, which is paper profit. So your portfolio, let's just say, your portfolio starts at 100, it reaches 150. You've seen a 50 on the screen. You think 150, I've got 150 in my pocket. Great, I'm going to think about all the stuff I'm going to buy, the Louis Vuitton bags and all the
the Lambos. the women,
yeah,
everything, yeah, the gold chains,
yeah, all of it. And then it goes down to 135, and so, you know, naturally people think, oh, I've lost $15,000. So at what, I think the big question here is, at what point did that $15,000 actually become yours? So this is, you've taken ownership at the peak value, even though you never realized it. And this is where, you know, the ideas around psychological ownership and the endowment effect are going to be useful, because the reality is, to trade well, you need to trade with confirmation. Trading with confirmation means not trying to pick the exact top and the exact bottom, which inadvertently means you will be leaving a certain portion of profit on the table every single time. By doing that, by making that deal, by trading well with confirmation and leaving, giving the market a percentage, by selling when it is telling you that it's rolling over rather than trying to pick the top, you are giving your chance, yourself a chance to be a trader that sits in the category of let your profits run and cut your losses short. Because what that allows you to do, if a stock runs at a peak and it starts to fall back down, like those examples, but that's only a pullback before the next run higher. You don't sell because there's no confirmation telling you to sell there, because it's just a pullback. So you stay in the trade, and then next run is even higher and you continue to make more money. That's how you let your profits run, not cut your profits short.
Such a good point.
But that exchange, you have to make a deal with yourself in the market. And that exchange means that when it's time to sell, you're never going to sell at the absolute peak. You're going to give some back to the market. But that's okay. Because in the long run, you're walking down the path of long-term success, which is that let your profits run, cut your losses short, not the other way around. That is, I think, the best way we can put this scenario. So if you are thinking about what trade-off you need to give, maybe it's time that you have a good look or a good hard conversation with yourself. If you're being the opposite and say, what am I willing to do? Am I willing to give the market a little bit off the top? Now, again, this can be different depending on strategies. If you're trading more short-term for income, regardless, still, you need confirmation. I just think it's an important point.
Oh, so important, so important. And that's what's going to protective capital. I mean, we call it, the actual name is a trailing stop loss, you know, in our course. And of course, we cover many different strategies on how to apply these trailing stop losses. And what it also allows you to do is that now you've got a strategy that you can implement for future trades as well. Because last time, if you sold on a whim, oh, just because it hit resistance or something, that's not something that you can necessarily replicate. So I really like that point, because it's going to help you protect your profits and it's going to improve your strategy at the same time.
Yeah, look, the reason you're anchored to these prices when they go high is because you've got experience with it. It's locked in experience. It got to 15, you felt it, you saw the money. So you think it's important. But it doesn't mean the market thinks it's important. It's just a bloody number. It's just a move for the market. So don't confuse the two. Don't think because you think it's important, it's actually important. And you've experienced that at a certain price, so it has to be there. And another thing that happens is why people don't sell is regret aversion. So what if I sell and it continues to go up? So you're considering selling at 13, but your brain immediately imagines if you sell at 13, the stock goes to $18, you picture yourself, what an idiot, why did I sell? So you don't do nothing and then it keeps falling. But not selling is still a decision. So like if you own 20,000 of BHP today and choose not to sell it, you're effectively deciding, given everything I know today, I'm comfortable having $20,000 invested here. So the thing for me, what if I sell and it goes up? Again, these are the deals you have to make with yourself and the market, because you have to accept the unknown if you're going to do this thing right. Two things actually pop up to me. The first thing is you're less likely to ask this question if you have a structured trading plan, because one, you know that it may happen, but two, you know that the probabilities are in your favor when you do sell, that price will continue lower because you've waited, you've seen price do its thing, and it's telling you that price is likely to go lower. Now, that's the first thing. The second thing is you accept that I know that things can change tomorrow, and I'm okay with that. Mm-hmm. And there's nobody holding a gun to my head saying I can't rebuy in if the opportunity presents again. My job is not to kick myself if I sell and the stock stops falling and goes back up. My job is to assess that and understand that and say, okay, where's it likely to go to next if it reverses back up? And is there a trade opportunity in that for me? That's the only question you need to ask, not why.
Yep. Yep, for sure. And I'll go back to the, you know, the bird in the hand, saying that, $1,000 profit taken already in your pocket. And just because the stock goes up and you could have made 2,000, I mean, be happy with that 1,000, be happy with that amount that you got from the market. And of course, then you can improve your strategy and say, okay, well, how could I have actually let that run a bit more? Is there a strategy that I could have implemented? And then you learn from it. And then maybe next time, then you will make that extra 1,000 or that extra percentage. But definitely be happy with what you get. The market is there. You're just an observer. You're just participating. You can't actually make the direction of it. Be happy with what you can get out of it.
Yeah. And I think this is an important part we're going to move into now, which is let's talk about some maths, some real maths to really hone in on.
Yeah. Sorry, I've got a phone call.
I'm not your strong pointer.
It's all right. Simple maths, yes. If we're going to talk trigonometry.
No. I'm going to keep this very simple. But I want to, it highlights the point of if you do hold on to these losers, what it actually means. So let's dive into some serious maths. Now, if your portfolio loses, this is how much it needs to gain to recover the money. Okay, so let's just say, mm-hmm. You're down 10%. You need to make it needs to recover 11.1% for you to make your money back. Okay.
Yeah.
If you're down 15%, it's got to recover 17% for you to make your money back. If you're down 20, it's got to recover 25%. If you're down 30, it's got to recover 42.9%. If you're down 40%, it's got to recover 66.7%. And if you're down 50%, it's got to recover 100% for you to make your money back. Now, this is hugely important, and most people don't even know this. If you lose 50%, what do you need to make to recover? A lot will instinctively say that it's 50%, but it's actually 100. So, you know, risk management isn't simply how do I stop losing money? It's how do I protect enough capital that I can compound effectively when the next opportunity arrives? Yeah, it's when you look at the numbers, you've really got to go, well, I must be crazy if I'm going to let a stock fall 50%. Because every time it falls further and further, it's got more to make to recover to get you back in the game.
Yeah, and we haven't even touched on, 60, 70, 80%.
Well, we're going to do
that
it.
That would take.
We're going to do it now, mate.
Because This is the scary part.
We're going to talk about the GFC now. And we're going to use this example because you say to somebody who's let's just say wants to just do this as investing, doesn't want to be full-time trading, just wants to be an investor, wants to grow their super, wants to retire well, much better than what the industry standard is. They got to think about these moments, the GFCs, because in everyone's working life, there will be one that will fall 50, 60 stocks. If the market's falling 50, there'd be stocks falling 70, 80. Like Fortescue fell almost 90% during the GFC. Plenty
and,
of
and that's
banks,
a big stock, yeah.
Banks Rio. Got slammed. Rio too, yeah. So the thing is, you don't have to predict every crash to come out far in front. Imagine, let's use 100 grand and let's imagine two investors entering a severe bear market. So investor A has a discipline to an exit process and sells about 15% after the peak of 07, which is very easy if you just get Dale's book and look at one of the techniques in there, right? So he's left with 85,000. Return needed to reach 100K again needs only 17.6%. Now, Investor B refuses to sell because timing the market is not as good as timing the market. That's what all the mainstream tells you. You one bad day out of the market and you're going to destroy all your potential profits. Yeah, sure. and so he refuses to sell. It'll recover. And hypothetically, he experiences a 50% decline. So now he's down to 50K. The return required 100%. So you can sell and the market immediately rebound. You can get whipsawed. This is where you can re-enter. But the bigger picture is avoiding the full extent of a handful of catastrophic declines, it can have enormous effect on the long-term compounding. Over a 20, 30-year trading career, that can matter far more than squeezing an extra few percent out of every bull market. Way, way more. So,
yeah.
And the time will come again, whether it's in 5, 10 years, whenever, there'll be another crash. And if you're someone maybe 40 years of age, this probably should speak directly to you. If you don't have the skill set to be able to see a market roll over, and it doesn't matter even if they roll over, because the reality is these 15, 20% corrections, you can see it. You know, with things like techniques that we teach, you can see the trends, you can see the trend lines, you can see whether you should be selling or it's coming back to the trend line, that you don't have to. When you see something far worse starting to unfold, patterns, all that kind of stuff, you get out of those big ones and you keep that nest egg that you've retired, that you're going to retire with, or you keep much more of it. Because let's just say you're 40, and the next one comes in 20 years, a year or two before you're about to retire. Let's just say the person that was planning on retiring in 2008 and he's seen half his super wife and he's worked his whole life for it, or she. Mate, you're going to work. It's destroyed you.
Yeah.
It's actually destroyed you. Can you live with that? Can you sleep at night with that?
And I suspect that ruined a lot of people's lives, you know, during the GFC. And I've heard some horror stories. You know, to do with property as well. And like you said, these do happen. The market is very cyclical in that way. And it, you know, I can guarantee that there is another one coming up. You know, I think anybody can guarantee that another one is coming up. We're safe to say that, yes.
Yep.
Like all these people that have been saying that there's a crash coming. Yeah, they're going to be right eventually. It's knowing exactly when that is the part. But I mean, you can use a lot of the more strategies, the more analysis that you put in the chart, the more you can time it. But you don't need to time it exactly. You can just use simple techniques. Just draw a simple line underneath the chart, and really that's enough to at least get you out at a reasonable time. So then you can get out of that overall move. And you know, it does seem like there's possibly, you know, one big one coming up, I would say, in the next 5 years. The next 5 years, people need to prepare, because the market has been running quite hard, and we're due for one of these big corrections.
And the smart way around this is, and if I can, you know, elaborate on what you're saying, is don't just sit out of the market and be one of these ultra bears that says, oh, a market crash is coming, I'm going to do nothing. No. Because before a crash, you get a beautiful boom. And there have been so many of these Jeremy Granthams, high-end people, we covered them, that kept calling for a crash, and they did nothing about it. We're saying the flip side, ride the market up with the skill set, because that's what our traders can do. They can ride the market up, not listen to the fear, but the second it starts to roll over, they can flip that switch and not just protect, but even profit from the downside. That's the key to all of this. Don't lock yourself in a bearish view. Not at all. It's not what we're saying. But know that markets go up and down. And when that crash does happen, if you cannot time it and identify it, have the knowledge and the skill set to identify it, I think you're in far more danger than you probably know. And we have techniques to be able to identify it. So this takes us to, I think, our last point. How do traders actually fix this? You know, before entering, let's just say $10, you have an initial stop loss, you know your risk, You know your reasons for exiting, technical, whatever they are. You know your profit margin. So the critical part is these aren't specific numbers. It's that you made the decision when you're emotionally neutral. Before you get into a trade, I mean, we always say this, before you get into a trade, you should know where the stock is likely to go to. You should know where your stop loss is, where you're, the point in when you're wrong, in your analysis is deemed wrong and it's likely, it's broken your thesis, and you have a methodology to ride that move up and down. So, you know, really it just comes down to stop thinking about the highest portfolio value. If your account goes from 150, from 110 to 150, down to 140, you can't obsess over the 10,000 because you never had it. Ask yourself, has my exit condition actually occurred? If it has, you be objective about it, you get out. If it hasn't, you have reasons to stay in the trade. What you believe and what the market is doing are two separate different things. And once you can accept that, accept the unknown, accept that the market doesn't care about what you think, you will be far more profitable and make far sounder decisions in your trading, and avoid these loss-making things that most people do, which they can be avoided. They really can, and they'll make a world of difference to you.
Yeah. Yep. 100% agree. Think like a strategist. Don't think like a gambler. That would be my advice. There's been great strategists over time. Napoleon comes to mind. Sun Tzu. You know, I'm talking about, you know, military strategists. And you know, when they go out to battle, you know, you win some small battles. You lose some. But at the end of the day, it's the war that you want to win. And that's the same with trading. You know, you think of your trades as little battles. Sometimes you win some, you lose some. You got to cut your losses. If you've overextended yourself, just say, you know, going back to Napoleon, if he thought that he's overextended himself, he'll pull the troops back. I mean, that's not taking a loss. That's being strategic and say, whoa, hold on. Let's think about this and let's reassess our situation. Exactly the same with trading. Reassess the situation and do it with a clear mind and a strategy in mind.
Yeah. And, you know, given we're on quotes, I'll finish it off like this. The trader who's willing to lose more often may ultimately lose far less.
I stuffed it up.
I've got to be more, mate. This is my finale before the curtain comes up. And you butchered me like that, far out. All right. A losing trade isn't necessarily a bad trade, and a profitable trade isn't necessarily a good trade. A good trade is one where you followed a sound process.
Wow. Yeah, that is deep. Does it quote who it's from?
Me.
Just some. Yeah. Yep. Philip Torteski. There you go, guys.
All right, buddy. Quote. Well, mate, thank you. This has been good. Thank you very much for this one.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Pleasure, man.
All right. And thank you everyone for tuning in. Hopefully it has brought up some things, emotions that I did when I was putting it together. If it's helped you, that's always the goal. We just try to give our experience to show our mistakes, show that, you know, all the things, the good and the bad, and hopefully allow your process to be much faster in this game, because it's the best thing in the world, trading and you know, learning from mistakes from people that have done it in the past can really put you on that step forward. So please, if you like this, give us a 5-star review, and so we can continue to get our message out. We do want another one of those trophies, whatever we got last time, podcast trophies.
So we're right up there, right? Yeah, we should check that again.
We need more people tuning in. So please help that process. Thank you. Have a great weekend, and we will catch you on the next one. Bye for now.
This podcast is brought to you by Wealth Within, a global leader in stock market education. For more information on our courses, head over to wealthwithin.com.au. Please note that the information in this podcast should not be considered personal financial advice.